Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. I'm delighted to be with you. I'm delighted to be with my co-hosts. And before they come on, it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And it's another beautiful day in my consciousness. I'm Reverend Dr. Cher Holton.
And I'm Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. And it's another beautiful day in my consciousness as well. And as you guys and gals know, we have two online ministries. One is affiliated with Unity, and it's the Unity Center for Universal Prosperity.com. And we also have a more global ministry, and it's called the Global Center for Spiritual Awakening.com.
And we invite everybody to come visit us.
You're not going to give them the shortcuts today?
The shortcut for the Unity one is UCFYP.com, and it's a Y because we spell Universal, Y-O-U, so it's Unity Center for Universal Prosperity.com, but it's UCYFP, and the other is YourSpiritualPractice.com.
Yeah.
So we have easy ways to get to both of them, and there are links also everywhere. Just search for
everything
us.
Is interlinked.
Yes.
And as a surfer on the internet, I like when things are interlinked, so it's easier to find things.
Yes.
I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you find my calendar, and where you will find the Absolute Word published as my weekly blog. And so as we get started, we're still looking at Spinoza, and this is part four, isn't it, I think?
I think I you're correct. So. Yes.
Part four, we're getting a lot of material out of this, and it's very
new.
So this is a good thing. We're going to be diving in, or actually completing our discussion on substance. And just so you know, this is edition 2020-17 of Metaphysical Romp 2. Of course, you can find that at metaphysicalromp2.com. Are you ready to play?
We are ready.
Okay, so anything you want to say before we actually jump into the text?
Just that it's surprising how much we're getting out of this article. When we first decided to do Spinoza, I know I was scratching my head thinking, wow, how are we going to stretch that out? Instead, it's been really interesting some of what he believes and then apply how we're using that today.
Yes, indeed.
So you want me to dig in?
Dig in.
All right.
Get out the shovel.
All right, here we go. So we're talking again about substance. And we ended our last show with the definition by Spinoza. He defines substance as what is in itself and is conceived through itself. For example, that whose concept doesn't have to be formed out of the concept of something else.
Wow.
Woohoo! Anybody want to work on that?
Well, so it's kind of like it's in plain English, and that's something I like about it. And I don't think I need to say anything more about that. Bill, do you want to say anything?
just what he's talking about is, and we talk about this, I think, in the third show on this, is that what he's talking about here is an uncaused cause.
Uncaused cause, yes, which we laughed about last time.
So
to dive into that, with a similar definition, Descartes, and if we remember, Descartes is who Spinoza got a lot of his inspiration from. He studied under him. So with a similar definition, Descartes developed the notion of two substances, extension, tangible things that can be felt, and thought, the intangible world of mind. So I think that's a really obvious thing we can wrap our head around. We got tangible things that we can feel, and we've got the intangible thoughts in our mind. For Descartes, the transcendent God had created two separate orders of being, but the philosopher struggled to account for how the two domains are related.
Yes, so we talk about this in Unity, that thoughts are of the changeable non-physical, and things are of the changeable physical,
right?
Yeah. And so similar idea, maybe in plainer English, but the word extension is a head scratcher for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is.
Because it implies an extender, which could be this God who had created two separate orders of being, right?
Yeah. And you know, bringing it down into the human body, if any of these scientists after Descartes had been paying attention, what he's suggesting here, for example, when he talks about extension and thought, when you think about it, the intangible world of mind and then the extension of mind is a very physical thing called the human brain, which simply records what mind does.
Yes, yes.
And the extension of our thoughts are what we manifest in reality, mm-hmm. which are the things. You could look at it that way too, maybe.
Yes, indeed.
I don't know why he doesn't just use the words tangible and intangible. I mean, that makes more sense.
It makes a lot more sense, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Descartes could give no account for what unifies our body and mind. In philosophy, this is known as the, quote, mind-body problem. Two linked but seemingly incompatible views of both reality and personhood.
And don't we find that in unity?
Yes. When,
you know, we have this threefold nature, spirit, mind, and body. And in traditional New Thought, it's all unidirectional, spirit to mind to body. Mm-hmm. And I think the way we need to find it today is to know it goes in both directions between mind and body. And that while they're, I think, seemingly separate is what we need to talk about, right?
Mm. So or like it, a continuum type thing.
It could be a continuum for sure.
Where we move from intangible, we move it toward tangible. I don't know. Maybe that doesn't work.
I don't know. And we don't know. And what Bill was talking about, mind and brain, are they truly separate? Can any one of those exist without the other and maintain all the attributes or qualities they have? And I don't know.
And another question which begs to be asked, because the three of us are certainly sound believers in questioning unquestioned answers, when we move from the intangible to the tangible, there seems that there could very well be a movement from the tangible to the intangible as well.
So that's what we were saying, is that we definitely have that movement. And now that you said it that way, is intangible and tangible better than non-physical and physical?
Right.
So that's something I'm going to want to dive into as I do more writing.
Because the quantum physicists who study the atomic world and subatomic world, when you think about it, even at the subatomic level, that could be a definition of what is quote unquote tangible at the subatomic level.
Yeah, so I make the assumption that any particle is tangible. Mm-hmm. Even though I can't see it with my naked eye, it's a thing, mm-hmm. and a wave would be non-tangible.
Exactly. That's, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, here's what's interesting as I continue reading. Spinoza believed that he had solved the problem that Descartes couldn't. He was more radical in his interpretation of substance, in that substance had to necessarily exist beyond difference entirely. For Spinoza, everything could be abstracted to the point that you could no longer abstract. You could reach a bedrock of being, a fundamental one that constitutes all things.
That is fabulous.
How about that for oneness?
That is fabulous, because isn't that what we have been moving toward without having read Spinoza? Is that Cher, you're not me, you're not Bill, Bill's not me. And we've been saying fundamentally, we are the same at this level that Spinoza's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the three of us have already played with the word being. I would change what Spinoza was referring to when he said that you could no longer abstract, you would reach a bedrock of beingness.
Beingness, yes.
Not just a being.
Yeah, so it's like he has this thing as the bedrock is this substance, mm-hmm. and then there's something, let's just say above that, that's differentiated substance, and then physical existence.
Well, with that statement too, Spinoza could tell that he was influenced by a belief in monism, M-O-N-I-S-M, because that sounds an awful lot like monism to me. Monism is some unifying principle, not a being, but a unified principle that contains all things, mind and matter, all existing things then, return to this source that is believed, according to monism, to be distinct from them, but it's an apparent plurality. It's really all aspects of the same thing, which is where our discussions, the three of us, have gone to about what truly is the quote-unquote, if there is a center of beingness, what this one is, or oneness, is probably more appropriate. And philosophically and even neuroscientifically, we're still asked that same question after all these years, the 21st century.
Yes, indeed, because we haven't solved the riddle completely.
We haven't, no. Right.
Yeah, we move into the realm of belief, don't we?
Mm-hmm. And then we ask the question, why is this important to us here and now? What practical application does it have? Which it does, but some people might be scratching their heads saying, boy, how does this, why do I care?
Well, I think that's going to be answered in the next section on attributes. So you have this undifferentiated substance, which we could call beingness, okay? And then when it differentiates into these attributes, which then underlie and underwrite everything.
Mm-hmm. And recognizing that we have that basic one bedrock gives us that place to start common understanding.
And that is going all traditional, putting God first. We're sort of putting the bedrock of what we are first, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
And what's interesting, guys, I'm just thinking, back in a past life of our romps, it's been probably a year ago at least when we talked about a concept called the Ark and the Aberon. The Ark is really, it's a Hindu term, but it's the same thing as this undifferentiated beingness when you think about it, the one reality. And when that one reality then has attributes, the attributes are initiated by this primal pulse called the Aberon.
Aberon, yes.
And which is what created our universe, of course, the bang, and what created all universes. But anyway, so when the Ark morphs into an Aperon, at the point of going from the unmanifest to the manifest, once it reaches the manifestation, i.e. like a big bang, the Aperon is what forms the polarities, the opposites, once it becomes physical. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. So just to make sure people are following, will you please spell Ark and spell Aperon for everybody?
Thank you. And we invite folks to look these up. It's a fascinating subject. The Ark is A-R-C-H-E, Ark, A-R-C-H-E. And Aperon is A-P-E-I-R-O-N, A-P-E-I-R-O-N.
Okay, because I was writing those down, I knew I didn't have the spelling right.
Yeah, those would be good to look up and just spend time reviewing. And if you're like me, you think, oh gosh, I'm not ready for that. But once you do start to explore it, when you're pushed into it, with the show, it's really interesting. And it does get your conscious awareness going of stretching.
Yeah, stretching and into concepts, right?
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, in our previous discussion on these two concepts, the Aperon has been analogized to be the same thing as the Word in the Christian Bible.
That's right. Thanks for that reminder.
Everything.
Yeah. In the beginning was the Word.
So in the beginning was the Aperon.
the vibration.
Yeah, the primal vibration or the primal pulse which created everything.
Yes. And so then the question comes, is that created intentional or is it just what it is?
Yeah.
Because created, that word has so much intention packed into it.
True.
It does.
And my suspicion is this Aperon doesn't have any intention. It's just doing what it is.
It does what an apeiron does.
Yes.
it's actualizing, it's expressing, or whatever words you want to use. What's your better words than creation, for sure?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Wow. And even those have things packed into
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Our
wow.
language is such an interesting thing. It can really
It is indeed. And I just want to share one more thing, because this is, you know, we just talked about oneness a little bit, is that as I've been sharing in the classes, that at our physical existence, we are not one in the way in which we're talking about. Wow. And I've actually been surprised at the sense of relief that people demonstrate in their affect, not necessarily in their words, but I just see them kind of relax, because we're so busy trying to make ourselves one on the physical level, which is an impossibility.
True.
Yeah, definitely.
True. And it's important to know that, and we've all talked about this before too, oneness is not the same thing as sameness.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that denies all the richness of our diversity.
Exactly.
It does.
I mean, there's so much there. If we ignore it, then we lose it. We lose that.
That's why I'm more and more liking to talk about ourselves as divine and human. Hmm. And divine needs to change, obviously. We could say we're substance and human, but substance is just not a good word, right?
Yeah,
that makes me feel lumpy.
Lumpy. Now that was an image I was not expecting to share, and I don't think I can unsee it. Oh my gosh! So how are we doing time wise?
Okay, we could probably do the beginning of attributes and introduce them.
That would be a great thing to do. Okay. So why don't you take it away?
Because the article then moves into, we finished substance and it flows right into attributes. And here's what it says: to account for thought and extension, or mind and body, Spinoza posited the idea of attributes. Attributes are different ways in which one substance is conceived of, how substance is experienced. Spinoza believed that there is an infinity of attributes of substance, but only two are available to human comprehension: thought and extension.
Whoa. Okay, here we go.
Wow, that might have been not good to throw in. Yeah. There's a lot that has to decide here.
Yeah, so just watch the time for me. Attributes are different ways in which one substance is conceived of. Mm-hmm. That is very cool. Because we conceive of things, it's not that the things are telling us. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so that gets us out of that creator paradox.
Mm-hmm.
So substance is something that's conceived of, and that there's an affinity of attributes of substance. And it was just last week we talked about words principle and divine idea. And it's like, ooh, is attribute a better word for those rather than those two words we've been stuck with in New Thought?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because attributes are part of or an expression of, not something different.
Yeah, so attribute is something we ought to look up. I'm going to see if I can pull up. I'm having trouble. I'm going to look up attribute. And that should give us some clue of its appropriateness, right?
Yeah, because you think about, is an attribute something we have that then we express? Or do we see attributes in people and in ourselves and then develop those?
So here's the first definition. I didn't go into Merriam-Webster, but we'll go with this. A quality or feature regarded as a characteristic or inherent part of someone or something. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about the word inherent, our New Thought cousins, Divine Sciences, talked about seven inherencies. Oh. And that's a really interesting word, that it's inherent, it's not acquired. And when we talk about attributes, those being inherent to everybody, I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. It's a concept, and it's, an attribute is never perceived in my mind as something physical.
Yeah, because we can have qualities that are unexpressed.
Absolutely. Well, so the thing is that I'm wondering if qualities are something that we manifest from attributes. Like we talked about the 12 powers, and we talk about them as 12 abilities. Hmm. So that our ability is demonstrated in the physical mind realm, let's call it that way, as a capacity within us. But as a principle, it just is. As an attribute, it just is.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I think we're sharpening this pencil probably a little too much for folks.
Yeah, but that goes back to the thought and extension that we'll dive into next.
We're going to that next time. And for now, let's turn to the absolute word. The absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And of course, these comes from Sunday, as I just said, and this is Sunday, May 31st, 2020. The word is love, and here we go. I am a loving presence to everyone. I am a loving presence to everyone I meet. Charles Fillmore said, God is love, the great heart of the universe and of humankind, from which is drawn forth all feeling, sympathy, emotion, and all that goes to make up the joys of existence. And that's an adaptation from Jesus Christ Heals, pages 27. It has been said that the world needs more love. The truth is, God is the universal principle containing all principles. One of those principles is love. It is omnipresent, maximal, and always available. It is the unchanging, unlimited resource I use to desire, harmonize, unify, and to be loving. Another principle is benevolence, which I express as my ability to be well-being. Used with love, I find the good in everyone and everything. I look beyond conflict and limitation and find the good that is always mine to discover. I am a loving presence to everyone I meet. And so it is. Thank you, Bill and Cher. Thank you, listeners. This is Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off with a grateful heart. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.